The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. They're doing some renovations over at the studio at headquarters in Edmond. As we grow in listeners and grow in reach, we want to do more to make that studio look as professional as we can, be as versatile as we can, to raise the standard. So I'll be hosting the show today from our UK studio while they make some upgrades to our US one. And if you are missing Mr. Flurry, tune in on Monday and hopefully be able to see what those upgrades are. I don't really know a huge amount of what they're doing over there, so I'm very curious to see what the new improved studio looks like. Well, if in your predictions for 2021, if you had financial crisis brought on by people buying shares in a dying company for a joke as the first crisis for a Biden presidency, well done you. That's something that I think is once again come just completely from left field. Now, I don't think it's necessarily a massive financial crisis, though there is something important here. But it's just felt like every second news story I've read today has been about GameStop. Maybe it's just my news feed, but it has been dominating my news feed just like a natural disaster or any other massive event. It's funny. I've been laughing at a lot of it. There are several big, important, serious points about it, and I think it's worth spending some time on it. This is a story that really, I think, exposes a lot about the American economy, the world economy, in a whole number of ways. And that is what goes on in the American economy, that's going to have impacts, ramifications that go way beyond economics and will spread all around the world. So we're going to talk about GameStop. We'll talk about tulips. If you know a little bit about economic history, you know exactly where I'm going with that one. If you don't, hang on. But we're going to talk about finance and the big trouble the US economy is in the long term. Now, if you're not familiar with this story, this all revolves around a company called GameStop. They're a company that sells games on discs. You know, you remember those things? CDs, DVDs. These days, most computers don't even come with a DVD player. People download games themselves. They download the software. So this idea of having a store that sells discs with games on it, that is a thing of the past. So it seems, it looks like bad news in the future for GameStop. So Wall Street investors did what they always do in these circumstances, and they bet against GameStop. They shorted the shares. And with so many people talking about this subject and shorting being at the heart of it, it's worth taking a few minutes to kind of get to grips with what is going on with a short. It will really help understand the story, understand some of the a big part of this is people getting involved in investing without understanding the risks. And this helps us get to the grips with some of that. I mean, these hedge funds know the risks, I guess. They calculate them. But a lot of other people. So, this is exactly the kind of story you could see being in the history books. You know, the great crash of 2021 or 2022 or whenever it is. Under that subhead, you could imagine the historian easily writing, the first sign of something being badly wrong was GameStop. So short selling, this is basically, like I said, betting that a stock is going to go down. So I used the example of spoons because it was the first thing that came to mind. I don't know what that says about me. Maybe it was because I had a coffee cup in front of me at the time. But you have 10 spoons and I say to you, well, can I borrow those spoons and I'll give them back in a week? And I'm thinking, well, I'm pretty sure spoons are going to go down in price. So I'm going to borrow your 10 spoons. I'm going to sell them for a dollar each, make $10. And then when it's time to give your spoons back next week, I'm going to go out and buy some more spoons. And I think I'll be able to pay 50p each for these spoons and I'll make a £5 profit. You know, you still get the same number of spoons back, but in the meantime, I have sold them when they were more expensive, bought them when they were cheaper. So I do it. But short selling can also go horribly, horribly wrong because there's almost no limit to how much money you can lose if you are wrong. There's no theoretical limit at all. I mean, let's say normal investing, if I think spoons are going to go up in value, I buy your 10 spoons for $10 and I sell them for $20 and I make $10 profit. Well, if I'm wrong and the price of spoons tanks and everyone decides we don't want to buy spoons, the most I can lose is $10. I cannot lose more than I paid for those spoons. Those losses are limited. I'm not going to go bankrupt. I'm just going to lose the money that I put in. Shorting is not like that at all. You know, I borrow your 10 spoons. I sell them. Now I have to buy 10 new spoons next week to pay you back. And let's say I'm wrong. Let's say the price of spoons doesn't fall. Let's say it goes up. Spoons are now selling for $5 a spoon. I have to pay $50 to buy 10 spoons to give you them back. In that circumstance, I've not just lost $10, I've lost $40. And like I said, there's no limit to how much I can lose. If that price, the higher the price goes, the more money I lose. And it can get worse. Let's say I'm not the only person shorting spoons, you know, borrowing spoons, selling them, and planning to give them back later. Let's say there's lots of us doing it. Except this time, somebody else hears about what we're doing and they have a plan. They are going to deliberately buy up every single spoon they can get a hold of. They're going to go around all of the stores. They're going to buy so many spoons that spoons are just so hard to find that you have to pay ridiculously high amounts of money to get spoons. Well, then I'm in big trouble. I desperately need spoons. But then there's all of us that shorted spoons. We're all kind of in competition to try and hunt down those last remaining spoons and buy them. We're bidding against each other. I'm faced with a tough decision. I want to try and buy more spoons as soon as possible because they're just going to get more and more expensive as all of these people rapidly try and grab them. And the price, and this just shoots the price up even further. And this is called a short squeeze when people do this and try and punish the short sellers. And this is exactly what happened to GameStop. And it almost bankrupted entire hedge funds. Melvin Capital, they ended up needing a bailout of around $2.5 billion. What happened was a lot of firms shorted GameStop, betting that GameStop would go bust, would go out of business. And this normally drives down the share price when firms do this. It can sometimes be a self-fulfilling prophecy. We think they're going bust, we short their shares, and it leads to them going bust. But this time, that didn't happen. Wall Street Bets, they're a thread on Reddit, a discussion thread, and they got together a ton of smaller investors, and they said, well, we're going to get together and we're going to buy GameStop shares. And they were kind of gamers, and they had a nostalgic love for this company. They all got together to buy the shares. And this time they bankrupted the big guys. All of these, this large number of small investors. And this whole thing has taken on this kind of rich versus poor dynamic. This Robin Hood almost dynamic. The little guy beat the big guy at their own game. They bankrupted the hedge fund instead of the hedge fund bankrupting someone else. And this is where we've reached the next stage in the kind of GameStop saga. Because Robin Hood app is where a lot of people are buying these shares. It's an app you can get on a smartphone to trade with. And as GameStop shares became stupidly expensive, you know, GameStop became a Fortune 500 company almost overnight. They went from going bankrupt to being, yeah, Fortune 500. I think they're even in the top third. And you can see we're putting up a graphic there. You can see just how fast those shares rose. But then the Robin Hood app stepped forwards and prevented people from buying the shares. So you reach this situation where if you're Wall Street, you could keep trading. If you had an account with some of these big share brokers and you had a lot of money, you could keep trading. If you're one of the little guys on these apps, you couldn't trade. And I don't think they were the only ones to do this. And now they're facing lawsuits. One of the top places Robin Hood gets its money from, it was one of the investment firms losing money in the short. Citadel is the name of the company. And so Robin Hood is being accused of doing the opposite of its name, stopping the poor from trading so the rich could be saved. Saving the rich and robbing the ordinary guy. Now, Robin Hood denies that. They said that they were just stepping in to stop their investors losing money, their customers losing money. But there's lots of corruption accusations here. And like I said, this is in a lot of ways just the little guys doing what the big guys have always done. You know, George Soros, he made his money by betting against the British government. And I think he did it to the Thai government several years later and other firms as well. You know, he made his money by bankrupting companies, bankrupting governments, betting against them and winning those bets. And now, in many ways, it was just ordinary investors doing the same thing, except instead of one really wealthy person or one really wealthy fund, like George Soros did back in the 90s when he bet against the pound, it's large numbers of ordinary people bankrupting hedge funds. And then you see Robin Hood step in and stop them. The SEC, US authorities are talking about getting involved. So there's this feeling now of, okay, well, it's fine for the wealthy firms to do it, but when we try and do it, you stop us. And it's becoming this whole rich versus poor thing, as I said. And I have a fair bit of sympathy for that view. I think it's hard not to cheer on the little guy. I don't know whether it's quite that simple. Tucker Carlson and Ted Cruz and others, they've been calling out the hypocrisy. I mean, one of the other funny things about this whole story is, in what else do you have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Donald Trump Jr. on the same side? They're both with the Wall Street Bets guys. They're both kind of criticizing these big hedge funds. And there are some things that do look pretty dodgy. That this whole story is bringing to light. And really, that's what I want to focus on for this whole show. In a whole load of different ways, we are getting a good hard look at the US economy through this pretty funny news story. It's not just a silly story. It is exposing a lot of different things at a lot of different levels about the US economy. And one of those, I think, is potential corruption. Citadel, this company that is potentially losing out a lot of money, to the Reddit guys, Citadel paid $800,000 to Joe Biden's Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, in speaking fees. And Yellen has made over $7 million from speak. I mean, how good has your speeches got to be if you're being paid $7 million so that you can speak? That I would expect, you'd have to expect some pretty memorable speeches. Citadel as well, they're founded by Ken Griffin. He's a major Republican donor. He's funded the presidential campaigns of people like Mitt Romney and John McCarthy. So was Yellen involved in Robin Hood's decision to stop GameStop trading? You know, did she pick up the phone, tell GameStop to stop the trading tell Robin Hood to stop trading GameStop? That's very plausible. You know, Ben Bernanke, they're a senior advisor to Citadel. You're seeing all of these links between big businesses, big banks. I mean, not just the Biden administration, the entire kind of financial regulatory bodies going back years. And this is, you know, Tucker Carlson talked a bit about this. We'll just play a minute. He focused on GameStop for quite a long time. He made some great points. But this is just from one of the things he made, I think, in his introduction, clip one.
A group of people on Reddit decided to buy up GameStop options, and that triggered a chain reaction that drove GameStop's share price higher and higher and higher. As of today, shares of GameStop are up 1,700% since the beginning of the month. That means people on Reddit profited, people in hedge funds who were betting that share price would go down lost money. And that's a crime! Only people who work for hedge funds are allowed to manipulate the market, often with the help of CNBC. Normal people are not allowed to do that. Already, the people in charge of our system are outraged that anyone without an official position at a hedge fund would dare manipulate the market to their benefit. The communications platform Discord has taken action against this. They've shut down the day traders, claiming that they're committing hate speech. In other words, if you do what hedge funds do, but you don't work at a hedge fund, you're a racist. Obviously.
Yeah, I'm really not quite sure how investing advice ends up getting clarified as hate speech or, Wall Street Bets, they don't claim to be offering investment advice anyway. But how that, it's a crazy story. And I think that could end up exposing a lot of corruption, a lot of these links between big businesses, some of these big banks and a lot of these senior members of the administration. And I think it is interesting that the Book of Amos has a lot to say about the rich. You know, God, in Bible prophecy, he has a lot to say about corruption going on in our societies. I mean, I'll just mention one quick scripture here in Amos chapter 8 and verse 5. And I don't know exactly how much of this is corruption or just people getting spooked or what, but I think it is interesting to think about. You know, Amos chapter 8 and verse 5, it starts by saying, when is the new moon gone that we may sell corn and the Sabbath that we may set forth wheat? So this is talking about primarily people that have known about God's true Sabbath and not keeping it properly. But then it goes on to talk about making the ephah small and the shekel great, falsifying the balances by deceit. This is talking about fraudulent trading and benefiting from people in an unfair way. And, with a balances by deceit, something where, well, it looks like you're being paid fairly, but the ballots are rigged. It's rigged, or the balance is rigged. It's rigged against you. And quite a few years ago in our Royal Vision magazine, Mr. Joel Hillicker had a series of articles on God's law. And he wrote this: it's amazing how many places in the Bible rail against fraudulent business practices. The law, the Proverbs, the prophets, Ezekiel, Amos, and Micah, and the Gospels all reveal God's commands against such forms of stealing. God hates business practices that enrich the seller at the expense of the buyer. The next time you face a hard choice in business, God commands you to be motivated not by expedience and profitability, but by honesty and accountability to Him. But our world is saturated with selfish economic practices. Even though our governments constantly devise new regulations to prevent the most egregious offenses, people constantly find ways around those regulations. And we are so saturated with economic curses. So we can be certain there are a lot of wrong business practices going on in this world today, and God hates that. And it is just interesting how much the Book of Amos says about the rich. Now, a lot of that is about a church that is rich and increased with goods. And I think the primary target of a lot of this is talking spiritually. But in the Amos booklet, Mr. Flurry is Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry. He's quoting from one of the commentaries. And he writes here, Amos decried, this commentary writes, Amos decried the social injustice, the oppression of the poor, and the lack of any moral or ethical values on the part of the rich and powerful. According to Amos, the spokesman of Yahweh, Israel was a violent, oppressive, and exploitative society. The poor had to sell themselves into slavery to pay off trivial debts. The rich falsified weights and measures and traded dishonestly. Even the courts, the last bastion of hope for the poor, were corrupt. Judges were bribed to heat the poor out of what little they had. In fact, Israel was no longer capable of acting with justice. Truth and honesty were now hated. And Mr. Flurry, after that quote, he writes, "Let's not forget that this is an end-time book for the people of Israel today." And I believe we still have an article from Mr. Gerald Flurry coming in the next Trumpet print edition talking about the courts. But you'll notice the talk about the economy here. And I think it's also fascinating. You look in the last election and the relationship that the Democratic Party had with the wealthy. You know, all of this big business money going against President Trump. And then you have some of these big companies saying, well, we're not going to do business with President Trump. I think Deutsche Bank is one of the ones that comes most quickly to mind, where they said, well, we're not going to host your business anymore. How much is corruption is there? How many connections are there between big business and the deep state and some of these things going on? And Mr. Flurry's talked about corruption being exposed as part of this election crisis. Are we going to see financial crisis, corruption exposed? Will some of this GameStop fallout play a part of that, showing people how rigged the system is? Now, it's also important not to go overboard, not to note that, God doesn't say that wealthy people are evil just because they're wealthy. And in fact, as Mr. Flurry brings out in the Amos booklet, Amos himself was probably a fairly wealthy individual, a well-off individual. Abraham, certainly, and many other people in the Bible were wealthy. It's the corruption and it's the deceit, the selfishness, these wrong ways of gaining wealth that God condemns. And we're seeing... I think this is another part of the story that we're seeing, this politics of division and the politics of envy. And this whole, you know, people being stirred up to hate the rich and hate big business. This just increasing division in America, in Israel, all around the world. And that's causing some of this turmoil as well. I mean, this is why you have some people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez jumping on board with those on Reddit criticizing the banks. And it was interesting. I went on Wall Street Bets this morning, this Reddit feed that's causing all of this trouble, just to have a look. And what surprised me is the hatred motivating some of these people. There is a real hatred for the rich there. You know, I was expecting it all to be about kind of getting rich quick and, okay, let's jump on this as a way to getting rich quick. And there was a lot of that. But there was a lot really motivated by this idea of, I just want to get back at the banks. I just want to hurt the banks. That's why I'm doing it. I don't care. Like, if I lose money, fine. I just want to hurt people. And again, I'm not defending the current system. This is not God's system and this isn't God's economy. But at the same time, if you had that kind of hatred and that kind of politics of envy, that's dangerous too. And people with this attitude of, I don't care if I hurt myself, I just want to hurt some of these other people. You know, that can be dangerous as well. I mean, this is a bit of a different subject, but I just thought I'd mention it now. It does show some of the dangers of the politics of envy. It's a story from Portugal where you have a socialist government. And one of the big challenges, especially in Europe where schools have been shut down, and here in the UK, is that private schools have been much better at educating people than state schools have. You know, private schools where people are getting paid money, they have a pretty good incentive to keep educating children even while they're at home. And so they set up often very good online learning and things like that because they want to justify parents still paying the money during lockdown. Meanwhile, state schools have done generally a pretty poor job of educating children at home and having online education while their pupils can't come into school. And Portugal's socialist government, they have the solution. So they have a new lockdown, and so they just passed a law banning private schools from doing online education. So you know, this does nothing to help anybody. This is just about tearing people down. This is just about saying, well, people that can afford to go to private school, we just want to get rid of that advantage. We're not going to improve those in state schools. So, I mean, that's the politics of envy in practice. That's what socialism looks like. And you can see why some of there's so much attitude for socialism if people have this kind of attitude for... of let's just punish the rich and punish the banks no matter what it takes. Well, we'll take a quick break, but when we get back, we're going to keep going with this and talk about another important aspect of this story, another way that this really does expose things about the US economy, the world economy. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. And we've been talking about GameStop. We've been talking about the U.S. economy. We've been talking about some of what the Bible says about corruption in these times. But there's another aspect I want to talk about. And Mr. Stephen Fleury touched on this yesterday. And watching what's happening with GameStop, I kind of feel we're getting some real insight into history here. and especially into something known as tulip mania. This is one of the oldest, most well-known stock market bubbles, one of the dumbest stock market bubbles or stock bubbles. I think something I've kind of struggled to comprehend until today. I think we're seeing a very modern example of tulip mania, where in 1637, we're talking hundreds of years ago, people went crazy for tulips. It reached the point that a single tulip bulb was selling for 10 times the annual income of a skilled worker. A decade's labor for one tulip bulb. Charles Mackay, Charles Mackay, he wrote about this in a book, very popular book, The Extraordinary Popular Delusion and Madness of Crowds. And he talks about 12 acres of land being offered for a single bulb. You know, how on earth did we get to this point? Well, at first, yeah, you did have this situation where you kind of had new varieties of tulips and things like that, and people were keen on tulips, and so tulips were rather expensive. But then people started buying tulips not because of the worth and the value of the bulb, but because they believed the price would increase in the future. And so it became this kind of self-fulfilling thing. The price keeps going up. People keep jumping in and saying, well, the price is just going to keep going up more. And then eventually the bubble pops. People realize paying a decade's worth of labor for a single tulip. This is crazy. And a lot of people get burnt. You know, this money that's come from nothing ends up going back to nothing. I think we're seeing something similar with GameStop. There is no way that GameStop is a Fortune 500 company. You know, maybe they don't deserve to go out of business, and maybe they do have a future. They're talking about trying to pivot to online. And so maybe, yes, or maybe there's a viable business there. They're not a Fortune 500 company. Their shares are not worth what they were getting, close to $500 a share yesterday. There is no way, or at least $400 a share. There's no way they're worth that much. It was just a ridiculous amount of money. And nobody thought they were worth that much. They were just buying them for other reasons, buying them because they thought they could sell them in the future for more or to mess with the banks. But once you get this bubble, once people are investing, not because of the value of what they're buying, but because of just the hope of future gain, this is becoming something that's much more like a pyramid scheme and something where a lot of people can get hurt. And I think there is the potential for a lot of people to look at what's happening with GameStop and get hurt badly. You've got this situation where you've kind of got this gamification of the stock market that's been led by Robinhood and some of these other companies. I should say Robinhood disputes this. But like I said, I mentioned Robinhood, this share investment platform that people have been using, and there's other similar ones. It's an app, and it appears very much like a game. You get notifications, it's designed to kind of be addicting, just like a game is. This is not designed to be something where you buy shares and you set them aside, and this is a form of savings and investments, and you'll come back to it later, and you just want a safe store for your wealth. This is something that they want you coming back to, trading quickly, trading a lot. You get kind of confetti symbols and things like that popping up. It's made to be addicting, just kind of like a game. And the Securities and Exchange Commission has been investigating them because of this. Like I said, they dispute that. They say it's just designed to be a modern, interesting, exciting interface. But then so many of these platforms, they make it really easy for people to get involved in trades they don't understand and to do trading that they don't really understand. You know, margin trading, for example, is something that a lot of these apps make really easy, scarily easy. And again, I'm not going to go into this as much as we talked about short selling, but this is basically where you borrow money to buy stocks, and it can be a way of getting rich quickly. Yeah, sure. Let's say I have £1,000 to or $1,000 to invest in the investing world. I guess that's a fairly small amount of money. And if I just stick to that $1,000, I'm limited in how much money I can make. You know, I invest in a company, its share price goes up 10%. I've made $100. Great. It's nice. It's not a life-changing amount of money, though. So let's say I'm a bit greedier, I'm a bit more ambitious. Well, I could take that $1,000 and I could leverage it. I could borrow $10,000. Well, now if the share price goes up 10%, I've earned $1,000. I've doubled my money. I haven't just gotten a little extra. Great. Well, then what about even more? What about if I borrow $100,000? Goes up 10%. Well, now I've gained $10,000. I've got 10 times my money. This isn't just an incremental increase. It's a massive increase. But many of you, I think, have probably spotted the flaw in this. What if the price goes down? You know, if I'm not borrowing money and the price goes down 10%, I just lose $100. If the price somehow disappears to zero, the worst that can happen is I lose all of my money. But if I've leveraged myself, let's say I've borrowed $100,000 and it goes down 10%, I've lost 10 grand. I've lost all the money that I started with and quite possibly my house as well. But this is the danger that comes with some of those apps. It's very easy to do. You know, one person was telling me about how they were just trying one of these out and they accidentally borrowed money or did margin trading. They didn't even realize they were doing it, but they were borrowing money to spend on shares. Now, that wasn't their intention. But it shows how easy they make it to do this, how easy they make it to borrow money, how they can encourage this type of trading. And then there's all, with all of these badges and the kind of the gamification aspect of it, it pushes here. And I think there's a temptation to kind of hear about GameStop and what's going on and jump in. Yeah, you know, I see that. I was just looking, like I said, I was looking at the what is it, Stock Market Bets, the Reddit site this morning. And yeah, there is a bit of a temptation to, oh, they're planning to do it again to GameStop today. And people in Europe are already getting in on it. And they say, well, a lot of places are still shorted. Let's jump in and we can push GameStop even higher. But what happens, you know, you hear about the success stories. You don't hear about the failures. And I mean, even the people on that site are pretty open about the fact that most of the time, I mean, there's plenty of people said this on the site. Most of the time, what's on this site is horrible advice. And every now and again, you strike gold. You know, it's gambling. A lot of this kind of day trading and what goes on Wall Street Bets, I mean, they're pretty open about it. It's gambling on the stock market. It's not about investing, and people can get really badly hurt by that. And well, we'll get to why soon. You know, it ended up, there was one person, I think it was over this summer, it might have been the summer before, where they were using the Robinhood app, and they ended up losing a huge amount of money. And I think they thought they'd lost more than they actually had, but this individual ended up committing suicide, just not able to kind of cope with how much money that he thought he'd lost. And just poking around a bit on Wall Street Bets, there was one guy, this was from a couple of years ago, who he invested $5,000. And he came up with this super clever investment strategy. It was pretty complicated. I didn't take the time to digest all the details. But he was convinced that this was a surefire win. It was guaranteed and could not fail. And that he'd thought up this brilliant strategy. And he started with $5,000. He ended up losing $60,000. I think it was 58,000, so close to 60 grand. And this whole thread was mostly just people laughing at him. You don't hear those kind of stories. You see GameStop shoot up and you think, oh yeah, if I'd have jumped on GameStop yesterday or 2 days ago when it was just this tiny price and it's gone up by a 1,700, how rich could I be? Or yeah, I kind of think about that a bit with Bitcoin. The first article I wrote on Bitcoin was $80. A Bitcoin, and you just think, oh wow, if I'd have just kind of bought one for fun back then, how much money would I have made? But then you don't think about all the things that you could have put money on at that point that you would have lost it all as well. And you don't hear the stories of the people that lose all the money. I mean, for those maybe thinking about jumping in GameStop, the example of Isaac Newton is a good one. And this was another bubble. The South Sea bubble of 1720. This was one of the really big stock market bubbles where you had, again, a surefire way to make money, something that people were convinced could never fail. It was the South Sea Company. And the story is, and people have looked into it, and I think it's maybe not 100% proven, but is deemed, you know, very credible or very likely to be true, where Isaac Newton invested early in the South Sea bubble. He pulled his money out. He made 100% profit. He doubled his money. He did pretty well. He pulled out because he said, "I can calculate the heavenly motion, calculate the motions of the heavenly bodies, but not the madness of people." But you know, he pulled out, and then he just kept seeing the price go higher and higher and higher, and he started regretting pulling his money out, and thinking, "Oh, maybe I shouldn't have been afraid of that risk." So he put his money back in. invested at the peak and lost a huge amount of money. You know, even Isaac Newton, even one of the smartest people that ever lived, he ended up getting badly burned in a speculative bubble. You know, not kind of putting his wealth aside in a safe place, but gambling on the stock market, trying to get involved in these get rich things. And this is the point, you know, time and time again, these kinds of irrational exuberance, buying things that don't really have any value of themselves, but just in the expectation that it will go up. You know, that's a sure sign of a stock market crash. Not necessarily tomorrow. I mean, that's the million-dollar question, is exactly when. You know, maybe if you got involved in GameStop, you would make money in the short term. I don't know. But it's a sure term that things are not being based on real value, and that a lot of that money that's come from nothing is going to disappear to nothing very soon. And just looking on Wall Street Bets this morning, I saw people saying, well, I've put all of my savings into GameStop. I've put everything I had set aside, I've set into this company. And those people could end up losing everything. And yeah, you know, how many people are going to... These apps do make it so easy to invest, like I said, so easy to borrow, so easy to get involved in things you maybe don't even understand. How many people are going to be seeing these headlines about GameStop, about people making it rich? And there are people making it rich. You know, headlines about 20-year-olds that are now able to go buy a home because they bet big on GameStop and it paid off. People that have paid off the entirety of their student loans. How many are going to see these stories, get involved? Maybe some of them will make it rich, but you're going to get a lot of people losing a lot of money. And you know, when you see, and Mr. Flurry made this point on the show yesterday, the way the stock market's been going up, it's not as extreme as GameStop, but certainly it's almost a metaphor for the entire stock market. You've got this situation where the economy has been doing pretty badly over the, especially since COVID and everything going on in the last year, where the stock market just keeps on going higher and higher. It's completely divorced from actual value. And we're getting set up for another crash. I mean, one headline I saw today, and I think it sums it up very well, investing shouldn't feel like a trip to Vegas. If that's what it's like, if it's rolling the dice to try and get rich tomorrow, then things have gone badly wrong. But that's the whole philosophy of Wall Street Bets. It is basically gambling. I mean, will people make money? How high is it going to go? If you do pour all of your savings into things recommended by Wall Street Bets, will you make money? Yeah, I don't know. But there are some things that we can look at this situation and we can know for absolute certain. Absolute certain. And this is... I'll read some quotes from Mr. Armstrong. And he had a great insight on American economy that he talked about in his autobiography. He talked about in other financial articles. And he talked about our economy's boiler room. And really, that is what, throughout all of this different ways, you know, we talked about kind of the corruption of the big banks and things like that. You know, just the speculative bubbles that we're seeing. We're seeing America's boiler room exposed in every aspect of this fiasco in so many different ways. And that is one of the things that Mr. Armstrong, you know, he talked about. So I'll talk about this boiler room. He talked about some meetings that we would have with an entrepreneur called Roger Babson. This was, I think it was before he was, yeah, it is. It was before he was called, before he knew anything about God's truth. But he learned an important lesson from that. And he looked back on that a lot when talking about the economy. And he talked about this individual, Roger Babson. And Babson forecast the 1929 stock market crash. He was there at a meeting of executives. And he told people that, well, the economy's going down. And these people laughed at him. And Mr. Armstrong was there at this business lunch. They were all laughing at him. And you know, they were, what do you mean it's going down? Everything looks great. Stock prices are doing fantastic. You know, we're not going to have a crash. And sure enough, there was a crash. I mean, I have in my notes 29 stock market crash. I think it was a mini crash that was earlier in the 20s that he forecast. So I might be wrong on that. Or the 1929 might be wrong on that. But whatever crash it was, he forecasted a crash. And he came back. It was the same kind of association luncheon. And he explained why he forecast that crash. And he said, when you want to know the temperature in a room now, you look at the thermometer on the wall. But when you want to know what the temperature will be, in an hour or two from now, the thermometer can't tell you. You go down to the boiler room or you consult the US weather prophet. You look to the factors that determine conditions, not the thermometer that records conditions after they have occurred. You gentlemen looked at charts of current business activities, at bank clearings, records of freight car loadings and stock market quotations, the thermometers on the wall. But, he continued, there are laws that govern economic conditions. These laws are the factors which determine what conditions will be a few months from now or years from now. They are causes. And Mr. Armstrong commented on this, and he wrote, yes, your own personal economic future is determined by definite laws. Very few realize that the eternal creator set in motion invisible yet inexorable laws which regulate personal financial conditions. In my 50 years in God's ministry, Mr. Armstrong's writing at this point, so he's looking back after a long ministry here, I have seen that these laws actually work in the experience of many people whom I've known personally. I have experienced their relentless working in my own life. I had to learn that lesson the hard way myself. But he talked about these laws, and just going back to Babson, what did he say about these laws? And he said, this is Babson, he said, I looked at the way people as a whole are dealing with one another. I looked to the source which determines future conditions. I have found that that source may be defined in terms of righteousness. This is some great insight from a, I don't think it was particularly religious, maybe he was, but he's an investor talking at a business lunch. When 51% or more of the population are reasonably righteous, in quotes it has here in their dealings with one another, we are heading into increased prosperity. When 51% of the people become unrighteous in their business dealings with their fellows, then we are heading for bad times economically. You know, this is what's happening here, this is what we're seeing here with GameStop. We're getting a good hard look at the economy's boiler room. And what do we see? Do we see 51% of people, do we see a majority dealing with each other righteously? You know, we see the opposite. We see greed and selfishness at every single level. I mean, in a man's economy, greed and selfishness are always going to be there. But at times you can have greed and selfish, you know, you can have that, you can have people working to put in an honest day's work for an honest day's labor and trying to create actual value. What we are getting here is greed and selfishness everywhere. You've got, you know, big banks and corruption and being in bed with the politicians and all these kind of things. At the same time, you've also then got with the investors on Reddit, this get rich quick mentality. And that, I think, is just going to spread even further. And apps are encouraging this get rich quick mentality and you know, just throwing money at the stock market. We're seeing greed and selfishness at every single level. And those laws operate. Those laws are certain. And those laws tell us sooner or later we're in for a big economic crash. And that's something that's a huge deal. That's something, you know, even if you're not invested in the stock market, you know, that's something that is a major deal for all around the world. It's not just an economic issue. This is something that is really going to drive world events. And this is something Mr. Flurry also talked about in the Amos booklet, the role that an economic crisis is going to play in completely transforming Europe, taking Europe from being this kind of squabbling 27-nation combine into something that's much more unified, much more ruthless, something that dominates the global economy. Mr. Flurry talked about this over the summer. He had an article, Coronavirus and the Holy Roman Empire, talking about what the way that the coronavirus could end up causing crises in Europe, causing economic crises in Europe, causing Europe's debt to explode, and leading to this massive transformation. You know, this coming economic crisis, this is going to be a massive event soon. And you can see it building in GameStop and what's going on here with just a lot of corruption. And I just wanted to touch on quickly this idea of, you know, how to invest, or is investing a sin? Is getting involved in the stock market a sin? And this is just from our booklet, Solve Your Money Troubles, where we wrote, some have asked whether it is permissible or advisable for a Christian to invest in the stock market. Romans 14:23 states that whatsoever is not of faith is sin. That principle should guide your decision making, perhaps more than anything else. If you cannot invest in the stock market without violating your faith, then you should not do so. However, if you are comfortable with taking some risk with a portion of your wealth, and the portion is in capitals, then the market can be a consideration. But the booklet, the same booklet, says, with the advent of online brokerages, and you could certainly add apps to that, investing in the stock market has become quite easy for investors. Trade commissions are relatively inexpensive. An abundance of online research can be accessed with a few clicks of the mouse. The result has been a large influx of unskilled investors, making day trading quite popular. Day trading can be very risky and generally springs from a speculative or get-rich-quick mentality that is not biblical. And yeah, that's what we're seeing here. And so I'm not saying, in talking about this and condemning this get-rich-quick mentality, I'm not condemning this idea of putting a portion of your wealth away in a place that is not going to get eaten away by inflation so easily and things like that. Well, you know, that's not necessarily wrong. I'm not saying that now is a good time to get in the stock market either. I'm not giving any financial advice. But this get-rich-quick mentality is becoming so common. And dominating so much of that trade. So what we're seeing here, like I said, we're seeing a good hard look of the boiler room, but we also see how God is going to bring prosperity as well. We get a good look at how God is going to fix this. Because the Bible talks about, there's so much talking about prosperity. I mean, I've still got my Bible open to Amos 8 and verse 5. On the same page, you have Amos 9 and verse 13. That says, "Behold, the day comes, says the Eternal, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grapes him that sows seed, and the mountain shall drop sweet wine, and all the hills shall melt." God wants people to prosper. He wants people to prosper and be in health. He wants people to enjoy blessings, and he wants to bless people, just like we want to bless our children and have them enjoy prosperity. And there are just so many pictures. You can turn to almost any book of the Bible, certainly any of the prophets, and see just a beautiful picture of abundant prosperity in scriptures there. But Mr. Armstrong wrote in his booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, what it will be like. He talked about how God is going to bring about this prosperity. And again, it gets all about back to those fundamental laws and of cause and effect. Mr. Armstrong cites a whole load of these different scriptures and goes through and just paints this beautiful picture of the prosperous world tomorrow, where, you know, just ordinary individuals have space and comfort. It talks about every man sitting under his own vine and under his fig tree, people not being crammed together in slums or small city apartments. But Mr. Armstrong writes, how will this be done? By putting away the super powerful Satan, the prince of the power of the air, the spirit being that is now working in deceived, misled human beings. Ephesians 2 and verse 2, Revelation 20 and verse 1 to 3. Satan is the source of what we call human nature, which humans acquire from him. James says, do you think the scripture says in vain, the spirit that dwells in us lusts to envy? That was James 4 verse 5. And Jeremiah was inspired to write, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Jeremiah 17, verse 9. Human nature covets, wrote Mr. Armstrong. It lusts for the things money can buy. It longs for prestige, recognition, admiration, and popularity. It lusts for power, position, and wealth. And we see this all on full display in our economy and every aspect of our society. I this is going a little bit on a tangent, but I have time. Something else that I want to get into, I'll probably write on it in the next 2 or 3 weeks, is this rise of buy now, pay later lending. It seems like no matter what it is that I'm buying online, there's often a button there now saying, well, you can spread this cost out over the next several months. And I was having someone do a bit of research, gather some articles together for me on this. I didn't have time to go over it in too much detail for this program, but they were just describing a graph showing how many people have been using one particular service. This is Klarna, a very popular one. And she was talking about how it just skyrocketed once lockdown started. And you can understand why. Maybe there were people using that to make ends meet when the government really, you know, took away their livelihoods. But it's becoming incredibly easy to borrow money. Very easy to buy anything. It used to be that maybe it was a few kind of essentials that you could borrow money for, a car and a house and something like that. Now, and literally anything you want. It wouldn't surprise me. I haven't looked into it, but if you could order things like alcohol or your perishables on a buy now, pay later kind of basis and spread the cost over several months And human nature being what it is, well, that's a big temptation. We're really, some of these firms are really tempting a lot of people into debt this way, making it seem so easy. It's only £15 a month, they don't tell you how much interest, how much extra you end up paying off, and they're not very upfront about that, how much extra money you end up paying to spread it out like this. I think PayPal now, anything you buy on PayPal that you can do with PayPal credit, it wouldn't surprise me if this is just another big bubble industry that ends up having major problems for the US economy. But we have a lot of that lust, and we have banks there that are quick to take advantage of those lusts, that are kind of eager to lure people into debt. I mean, how many credit card offers do you receive regularly? Come on, borrow more money. We bet if you come to us, we'll give you a credit card that lets you borrow this amount. You know, they're actively encouraging people to go into debt for their own profit. I mean, we were talking about maybe potential corruption and links between politicians and things like that. You know, that kind of behavior is completely against God's laws, and that's everywhere. That's not speculative. And maybe I should have spent more time talking about that, because we just accept that as normal. But it's all based on selfishness and get, trying to entice people to make bad financial decisions so that you can benefit. It's a horrible basis for a financial system, but it's right at the heart of ours. And God's solution isn't to prop up this economy, to keep this economy going. I mean, we're talking about a resurgence in America. God isn't going to keep this economy going forever, because this economy is based on lawbreaking. That's why it's so unstable. Eventually, he's going to let it collapse, and he's going to replace it with a new economic system. But most of all, he's going to replace it with just fundamentally new values. He's going to change that deadly flaw in man's heart. And he's going to replace it with a new attitude, a way of give. And that is what leads to prosperity. That is what enables prosperity. Now, Mr. Armstrong, he continues in that booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, what it will be like. He writes, in God's kingdom, these commands of his will be obeyed. They'll become the standard for regulating commerce, business, finance, and the entire economic structure of the world. And it will be on the giving basis. Christ said, give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give unto your bosom. For with the same measure that you mete out withal, it shall be measured unto you again. Mr. Armstrong writes, it would require a thick book to begin to describe the wonderful conditions which could prevail on this earth, and which will finally prevail when the human heart is humbled, converted, given the very nature of God. Never again will anyone build a building he can't afford and doesn't need to lease and rent to tenants who help him pay for it. No more interest. God says it's a sin to lend money at usury or interest. Once each 50 years, all debts, public and private, will be cancelled completely. And it goes on to just list all of these details that flow out from this change of heart, this change of basis to the global economy, and this change to an economy based on give. That's going to be at the foundation of this new world's peace and prosperity. And so it's a beautiful picture that Mr. Armstrong paints in that book. And the Book of Amos and other books, they describe a dark time that's coming. They describe God punishing Britain, punishing America, punishing the whole world. And it's some tough punishment. But this is the reason why. This is what it takes for the world to live in prosperity and peace, for everyone to have the blessings that God wants them to have. You know, Mr. Armstrong talked about there, humility, humbling, the human heart being humbled and converted, man being willing to listen to God. You know, all of these things that we talk about, it's leading to that wonderful world. If you'd like to know more about that, we have our free book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. That's a great place to go to learn not just about God's economic laws, but this future in general. And then we also do have that book I mentioned briefly earlier. I mean, we've talked a fair bit about financial aspects, investing, some of these things. And we do have a book, Solve Your Money Troubles, that is full of practical things based on God's law that can help you receive these blessings that God talks about today. And to be blessed by God and to found our finances and our financial life on these laws. You can get both of those books from our website, thetrumpet.com. You know, we have all of our material there. Are really, if you're new to the show, or you don't know that we have a wealth of free material at thetrumpet.com. If you just go to literature, That brings up a showcase that shows you, I think, five or six of some of our most popular, most relevant booklets, most important books and booklets. If you go to all there, you have a list, and we have a whole lot of booklets. I forget where we are up to now. It's got to be over 100. There's a lot of free material there that we're very happy for you to read online for free, to download as an ebook for free, to order to get as a physical copy so you can really study it and mark it up. And you know, it's all based on the give way of life. It's based on people giving to this church, giving to this organization, so we can give it out to you. It's proof that what I'm talking about and about this give way of life works. So you can get that at thetrumpet.com. You can feel free to email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening all week. And please do tune in on Monday to see what's changed in our new and improved studio over there at headquarters.